This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Phoebe Judge. In the early 20th century, Sears Roebuck CEO Julius Rosenwald teamed up with educator and civil rights icon Booker T. Washington to bring formal education to African Americans in the rural South. By the 1930s, the result was more than 5,000 schoolhouses in 15 states. More than 800 of these Rosenwald schools were in North Carolina. Today, many of them are gone, but an exhibit at the Museum of Durham History highlights the legacy of one Rosenwald school outside of Hillsboro. The Russell School provided an education for African-American students from 1926 to 1945, and it is the last Rosenwald school standing in Durham County. The exhibit runs through the end of this year, and joining us to talk about Rosenwald Schools and the historic Russell School is the exhibit curator, Stephanie Pryor. Hello, Stephanie.
Hi.
Also with us is Phyllis Mack Horton. She's the chair of the Friends of the Russell Rosenwald School. Welcome, Phyllis.
Hi, thank you.
And Joanne Abel is a program coordinator at the Durham County Library. Joanne, welcome back to the State of Things.
Hi.
So, Joanne, let's start with you. Remind us how Rosenwald Schools were created.
Well, it was a wonderful partnership in 1913 when educator Booker T. Washington and philanthropist Julian Rosenwald devised a plan of matching grants to help build schools in the rural South. The Rosenwald Fund gave money, the local school system gave money, and the black community, being double taxed, of course, also had to raise money for the school.
And so how does the Russell School fit into that network of schoolhouses?
Well, it is the last standing one in Durham County. There were originally 18 schools. It was actually 17, but Person Town burned down and had to be rebuilt. That was a problem that happened to many African-American schools. And of all those schools, only Russell is still standing. So it's a very important icon of and memorial to the work that the African-American community did to create these wonderful schools.
Hmm. Stephanie, can you describe Russell School for us?
Yeah, it's a two-room school, and when you enter the interior, it's lit by huge windows that provided light for the students during a time when there wasn't electricity for rural schoolhouses. At the front of the school, there was an industrial room that was pretty early on converted into a kitchen, and the alumni tell stories about the lunch lady who made them lunches during the cold winter months. And today, when you go to the school, you'll see a variety of artifacts, including one of the original chairs or some of the original desks that the students used there.
And what's unique about the Russell School in particular? Is it this lunchroom? What's this unique qualities?
I think that I guess the unique quality is that it is the last remaining Rosenwald School in Durham County. And just to kind of reiterate Joanne's point, that the National Trust for Historic Preservation designated the Rosenwald Schools one of the most endangered historical sites in the United States, so that we have such a well-preserved example here in North Carolina and in Durham County is really a treasure for our specific community.
Joanne, one thing I was interested in is the north-south building. Can you talk about that and the light and how that affected?
Well, each school, the plans were either east-west or north-south, and they had to be placed properly so there would be light so the students could see. They even, the Rosenwald gave very detailed plans. They even gave what color you could paint the walls because they wanted to have them be as bright as possible.
To utilize the daylight.
Mm-hmm.
So what was going on in the area when the Russell School opened in 1926?
Well, Durham had just expanded in 1924 from to include East and West Durham, so it doubled in size and became one of the fourth largest city in North Carolina. At that point, 25% of the black farmers owned their land. Durham State Normal School changed its name to North Carolina College for Negroes, which is now NCCU. The Daughters of the Confederacy, interestingly, erected a statue to the soldiers in 1924, right before the school was built. The Biltmore Hotel opened in Hayti, and Daisy Scarborough's day nursery opened for black children. So it was a very active time. It was also a hard time. One-third of the black babies in Durham died in their first year of life in 1927, the year that the school opened.
And most of these Rosenwald schools were in rural areas. That was the point.
Yes, most of them were in rural areas. A few toward the end were high schools in cities. But in Durham, all of them were in rural areas.
With no electricity.
Yes, not for a long time. Yes.
Stephanie, will you describe the exhibit and what we'll see from Rosenwald schools in North Carolina?
So the exhibit uses photos and artifacts to tell the story of the Rosenwald schools, and in particular, the historic Russell School. So you'll see images of one of the first teachers at the historic Russell School. You'll see photos of the interior of the historic Russell School as it is today. And there's also an interactive touchscreen display that shows images, archival images from Fisk University's archives of the schools in Durham County that have disappeared. And there's also two artifacts in the exhibit. One of them is from the North Carolina collection at Durham County Library, and one is from the North Carolina Museum of History. So there's a French textbook that was used at Rougemont Rosenwald School that no longer survives. The school doesn't. And then a yearbook from Wake County, from one of the Rosenwald schools there.
Phyllis, you're a longtime resident of the area surrounding Russell School. Tell us how you were introduced to the building when you were a child.
When I was a child, I only remember going to the building. I did not know as a child that it was an actual school. And I remember the good food that we had. And only as I grew older did I see how my mother started interacting with documenting the information for the National Registry with Joanne and another church member, Claude Brooks, and they were responsible for having us in the National Registry for Historic Places.
And can you describe the community and the attitude towards the Russell School, towards education all around where you're from?
Right now, we are still in our infancy and trying to expose individuals to the school and let them know about its rich history and legacy. And I think that that's really important. I think that that is really important because a lot of people drive by the school and they do not know what it is. And so right now, we would like people to know about it, come to the school, tour the school, and understand its history.
And the fact that the students had a larger role in the school than just learning. There are other things going. Can you tell us about that?
Well, when you speak to the alumni, you can see the twinkle in their eyes. You can see how excited they get about that time and about bringing in wood to keep them warm. It wasn't a belaboring to them. They were excited about it. They talk about walking 4 and 5 miles to the school. When I grew up, St. Mary's Road was actually a dirt road, and we had rural route instead of the number that we have, like 2001 St. Mary's Road. But so that's something that's interesting, too. And they also talk about the outhouses, male and female, and going across the road to the creek and playing games that right now might be considered dangerous, but it was good time and fun for them.
So not only were the students learning, but there were chores, there were tasks that had to be completed every day.
Yes, there were chores and tasks, and primarily the girls also assisted the teacher with lunches and things like that, and then the boys were responsible for things like bringing in the wood.
We have some tape of an alumnus from the Russell School. This is Russell Mack talking about a routine morning when he was attending the Russell School.
We'll come get to school around 8:30 in the morning. Sometime we'd walk and eventually we got, the buses come by and picked us up. And they would drop us off out there in front of the school, And we would have to wait out there until the teacher get there, because she the one had to unlock the door. So it was cold, too. In the wintertime, it was really cold. So we waited out there, and so when the teacher come and opened the doors, we had to make a fire. Most of the larger boys would make the fire. And we would all get warm, by the fire. And that's when we'd start our classes.
That's Russell Mack, who's a distant cousin of yours, Phyllis, yes, talking about a routine winter school day when he was attending the Russell School. It's the last standing Rosenwald school in Durham County, and it's the subject of an exhibit at the Museum of Durham History through the end of this year. Joanne, this illustrates the kind of the community effort behind these schools. Will you tell us about what seems like a gigantic effort to get them going?
Well, the African-American community in the state, led by Dr. Aaron Moore, who is the founder of Lincoln Hospital and the Stanford L. Warren Library, started pushing in 1915 to get the counties and the superintendents to accept this money from the Rosenwald Foundation, also the Jeans Foundation, to be able to build these schools for the African-American communities. And so it involved getting the superintendent of the schools to accept the money, which was not easy because often they did not want to participate in improving black education that much. And then the Jeans teachers, who were acting as the main fundraisers for the schools, would organize the community, and they would have bake sales and they would have canning clubs to raise money. So any way they could. And these were not the middle class African-Americans in Durham City. This was the rural sharecroppers and tenant farmers. And so it really was, each school was a community effort that showed their tremendous commitment to education.
And a very interesting funding model, being that, you know, a third would be from Rosenwald, a third from the community, and oftentimes the African-American community, and a third from a white school board.
Right, right. And the Rosenwald Fund was kind of savvy because they would not give the school board the money until the school had passed two inspections to make sure that they were up to the standards. And sometimes that didn't happen and they had to go back and redo it.
Phyllis, how did this school change education for your community?
It changed education because they were allowed to have a formalized education. So it actually merits engagement and empowerment that they did have the opportunity to have a formalized education. Otherwise, they would not have been able to. And they get excited about, I actually passed the sixth grade. And otherwise, they wouldn't have been able to read and write. And what I like about it, the story, the history, the legacy, is that they didn't see it as an entitlement. They actually saw it as something that they deserved, and it was such an unlikely friendship in the 20th century for Booker T. Washington and Julius Rosenwald to befriend one another and have the forethought that these little black children in the South deserved an education as well.
Stephanie, what have you learned, and what do you hope visitors to the exhibit learn about Russell Schoolhouse and the Rosenwald Schools?
I think one of the things that drew me to the historic Russell School was a message of collaboration, that people of different faiths and different cultures could come together to create something for the greater good of the community. So I hope that that's something that people take away from the exhibition.
And in terms of the fact that we're talking a lot about rural schoolhouses, mm-hmm. was there any thought that in cities there may have been more opportunities, even in a segregated fashion, for the African American community? But in rural, because of a lack of education mm-hmm. or money or resources, there wasn't much at all.
No, there wasn't. And so these schools gave people an opportunity that didn't really have it. And people came together in a way that speaks of, I think, collaboration in the 21st century. I mean, this is, you know, something that we all connect with, that people of different faiths and different cultures can work together to accomplish a goal.
I just want to go back. We talked about the fact that this school had a kitchen, which was rather mm-hmm. rare for schools. It was not rare. We're having Joanne says no. We'll talk about the kitchen and the fact that there was meals being served
that
here.
That was rare.
Tell us
the
why.
Most Rosenwald schools initially had what was called an industrial room because the thing was that many people felt like that African Americans and working class whites were better suited to industrial education. And so most of the schools had, all Rosenwald schools in the beginning had an industrial room. It was frequently turned into a classroom or a kitchen.
But this one served meals and there was a working kitchen. Joanne, it's interesting because Rosenwald, there's no naming. There's no Rosenwald name on any of these schools. He was a rather hidden benefactor to this all.
He was and he wasn't. I did find in my research that they did have a picture of his in all the schools in the 20s. And he did visit Durham in the 20s, too, and he visited some of the schools, and we have a picture of him visiting one of the schools. And I can throw this out that there, the Durham County Library website exhibit, the women who ran the schools, folks can look and see a picture of all the Rosenwald schools in Durham. And I think you're going to link to it.
Yeah, of course. And it is also, we should just note again that there were, in terms of states breakdown, there were 800 of these schools in North Carolina. So were a majority, a large majority of these were just here right in this state.
Correct. Most of any state.
Joanne, the Russell School remained a school until 1945, but many others were still operating into the civil rights era. How did Brown versus Board of Education and the civil rights movement affect Rosenwald schools?
Well, many of the Rosenwald schools had closed during the equalization campaign when the white structures were trying to make schools separate and equal, which they did not. But you're right, the Russell School was a school until the 40s. So it was more that that equalization campaign led to the building of bigger, more consolidated black schools during the late 50s, I believe. So that was when a lot of the Rosenwald schools were closed over the whole South.
Phyllis, you talked about when you were little, the Russell School being somewhere that you associated with good food. And yes, the history of it was there, but it might not have been the most important thing. And that's happened to a lot of Rosenwald schools that are even mm-hmm. still existing. We don't know their history. They're operating as something else, a mm-hmm. community center, which has its own benefits, but forgets about the important past. What's the importance for you of preserving this building and letting the history be known?
I think for me, my ancestors were participatory in being a steward for the school. And when we have national resources come to the school, then they do say we have one of the most preserved schools in the country. And I take pride in that. And we have an alumna, Pearl Holman, and she is 94 years old, and she has been very active. I have pushed her outside of her box, and she's been very active in interviews and also the opportunity to speak. And Russell Mack is one of her siblings, and he's 84 years old. So I think for me, my heritage is there within the school, and I think that it's really important that people understand the hard work that they actually did in order to keep it up. And we do have some restoration projects to complete, but I would like to see more engagement with the youth because as the youngest member of the board, then that is my passion, to make sure that the youth understand that sometimes there's a disconnect with their history. And I really think that it's really important being the generation gap, but that we do instill that information into them, the history and the legacy, so that they can have pride.
And it's just to have something so preserved to go and say, well, this actually is how it is, how it was. I mean, the partition still stands, Stephanie. Can you talk mm-hmm. a little bit quickly about the partition?
So, yeah, the partition is extremely well preserved, and you can see a photo of it at the exhibition. And the partition wall was used to both close and separate the two rooms in the schoolhouse, but also conversely could be used to open up the space to have it serve as an auditorium. So we're extremely lucky that that partition wall survives. I mean, very few of them from my research survive in a Rosenwald school. So that this survives is amazing.
The exhibit is called Historic Russell School, Durham's Last Rosenwald Schoolhouse. It's on display until the end of the year at the Museum of Durham History. Stephanie Pryor is the curator of the exhibit. Phyllis Mack Horton is the chair of Friends of the Russell Rosenwald School. And Joanne Abel is a program coordinator at the Durham County Library. Thank you all for being on the program.
Thank you.
You can find out more details and see photos from the exhibit at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a local comic takes his own struggles with mental health to the stage. Stay tuned.